and welcome to The Parent Panel, a weekly podcast that asks one mum and one dad their thoughts on the events of the week, with a particular focus on the things that affect parenting. Today, we're talking about preparing for an apocalypse, what kids deal with today, negotiation skills, and parenting wins on hard days.
I do a massive job keeping them alive. I'm not going to climb up that slide and go down that slide and ruin my pants.
Two nights ago, my daughter punched me in the face for a laugh. And then I spent the next half an hour making her feel better about punching me in the face.
My wife and I have this great saying with each other, and that is, the days are long, but the years are short.
The Parent Panel with Siobhan Hunt.
Our mum today is writer and author Kerry Sackville. She has three children.
So many children.
But can we... They're not all children now. Can you call one an adult? They're 20, 18 and 12.
I've got technically two adults.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes. 18 is an adult.
Yes, but they're still living at home and eating my food. Nah. And, you know, stomping around upstairs when I'm trying to sleep.
They're not going to be adults until they have babies, really.
They're not going to be adults until they move out, quite frankly. Excellent. That's the end game.
All right. We're going to try and get Kerry's kids out of the house. Our dad is a meditation coach, voiceover artist and founder of Busy Dads, Grant Linden, who is not going to get rid of his kids anytime soon because he has three boys and a girl ages 12, 11, 5 and 4.
After this morning's effort getting out of the house, I might want to get rid of them quicker than you think.
Grant has four different drop-offs now, Kerry.
No.
Yeah.
Why? Surely you could have coordinated that better.
Well.
He's thinking now.
Exactly. Well, the real kicker is, the two older guys get the bus most of the time. But the real kicker is that the littlest guy, my four-year-old, his daycare centre shut down because they found some asbestos there, right? So had to shut the whole centre down. All kids have found temporary care. Some have just... And it's a rolling battle with that particular council where they say the soil tests aren't yet clear or whatever it is. You know, it's not yet clear for reopening. And
just pitch a tent in a field.
Everyone's... He's come to work with my wife and I a couple of times, a bit extra, you know, ABC iView, and because he's by himself, he's not fighting about what show he's watching with his sister, and so there's a few golden, you know, nuggets in it for him, but it is incredibly boring. This morning was 2.5 hours
in the car.
Wow.
It's 2.5 to 3 hours.
Brutal.
I've got a good advice, though. If you can find a good audio book, your mornings will run so much smoother.
Well, I'm highly addicted to a new... my podcasting listening is worse than my Netflix binging. And I'm fully addicted to On the Page. It's a screenwriting podcast.
Your kids enjoy that?
Yeah, they'd love that.
They have to.
Dad, teach me more about phrasing.
Exactly.
We have to listen to what the kids want to listen to. So we listen to How to Train Your Dragon.
You know what? I went through so many years of that. I have no sympathy. I've done my time.
That's my
wife's now
car.
Have earphones.
Oh, right.
Yeah, everyone's got their own noise cancelling.
We all just sit around, the four of us, everybody with their own headphones. You know,
excellent.
The kids are watching YouTube or porn, I don't know. I'm listening to my podcast.
That went offside very quickly. All right, we're going to start with a topic that everyone is talking about, and that is the coronavirus.
With shelves stripped bare as Australians prepare for a pandemic, take a look at this. We went out to take a look for ourselves yesterday, and there wasn't a toilet roll in sight.
Of course, that is Carl Stefanovic talking about the rush on toilet paper. And other things that people have been buying are paracetamol and tin goods like spaghetti.
Stags, chili.
Apparently people are buying lentils. I mean, I've never bought a lentil in my life and I am not going to start now. It's got to take something a lot worse than the coronavirus to get me eating lentils. I know you probably have like an entire room dedicated to lentils at your place.
And chickpeas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I saw a really interesting post. I mean, not to be too serious about it, but I did see a post that I hadn't considered, and that was from Oz Food, whatever it is, the group that the charity that supports people and tries to give them food. And they were saying, look, I know you're all panicking, but there are people who need their basic necessities and can only make it to one shop, like your elderly or someone who's got four kids and a single mum, whatever. They make it to the shop and you crazy fuckers have gone and bought all the toilet paper and they cannot go to another shop. So they go home and literally have no toilet paper while you're sitting there.
And it's not just that. It's the people who live week to week. You know, who budget week to week, who just do not have the cash to stock up.
Yes.
So they get their pay in and that's when they go to the store and they want to buy their rice and their beans and their milk. If there's none there for them, they don't eat for that week. They don't have reserves in the pantry. Mm. So it's really irresponsible.
Yeah. And look, I did make it serious because this was meant to be funny. Mm. after that little note.
Oh, yes.
Let's move on. So I did think, you know, look, what would be the one thing you could not live without in your family if you had to be shut down in your house for 2 weeks. Kerry?
I can't believe you even have to ask. Coffee.
Oh, yes, good point.
I'm the only one in the family who drinks it, but if I don't get my coffee, no one else is going to survive a week at home.
True.
So everything else, you know, if we run out of toilet paper, they can rinse their bums in the sink, but if I don't get my coffee...
Great visual just then.
They will run out into the street into the virus screaming. You know, they'll run out into the street in a zombie apocalypse if I don't get my coffee. So as long as we've got coffee, I think I've probably got about 2 to 3 weeks worth. Depends on how stressed I am, how much I need. Everything's fine.
Okay. Grant, what about you?
I was going to say toast, because toast is one of those things that the smell is so comforting and it's just an easy one for everybody, and all you got to do is stick something different on if someone's got another preference. But tea.
Mm, yeah. Calming.
Well, I enjoy a good coffee, but tea is the first thing in the morning.
What kind of tea?
English breakfast, Irish breakfast. Irish breakfast is stronger, so like that's the... Oh. But for me, like sitting at that cup of tea is that probably the same thing for people who are hardcore coffee drinkers.
But tea calms down, coffee peps us up.
No, coffee. Yeah. Tea's got plenty of caffeine in it. Yeah. It's a different kind of pep up.
Yeah.
Coffee's just like road rage, inciting, yes. Get the job done.
Yeah.
Tea's more like, okay, let's all just move now and smilingly do so.
And the good thing about toast is that if you run out of toilet paper, you can just use the toast instead.
If you use heaps of butter,
versatile.
It won't be too rough.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, we're going to stay with coronavirus because up next.
Oh, yay.
Yeah. Whew, well, you know, it's all anyone's talking about. Yeah. We're going to be talking about all the scary things our kids are exposed to. This week, Frances Whiting said, "It's amazing that today's children do anything." So she's talking about the media saturation we've just had, bushfires, floods, now coronavirus. Kids get exposed to a lot of that. And then she was talking also about social media and the fact that, you know, they could have one photo taken in their teen years that will haunt them from the rest of their lives. And she's saying, look, I think kids today have more to deal with than we did. But at the same time, it is fair to say every generation has gone through an intense period of fear. So I didn't live through the Cold War, but I've heard that a lot of kids at that point thought, and adults thought, the world was just going to be destroyed through a nuclear holocaust, basically. And then, of course, my generation, it was AIDS with all of those awful ads of the Grim Reaper bowling.
And... Don't drink from the bubbler.
So there's...
Use a condom always. I'll never forget that.
I love that that's something that you hung on to. But it is. It's one of those things that every generation has had something that scared them. Grant, do you think that there is more fear for children today, that they're exposed to more fear? Or is it something that every generation goes through? And children, are they naturally robust? Do they kind of shrug it off?
I think yes to all of those in different ways. You know, like, it's all relative, right? You know, so like, yes, when I was a little guy, you know, there was the, you know, Midnight Oil did that great record 10-1, and, you know, it was all the nuclear disarmament. That party was massive, led by Pete Garrett. And then, of course, the AIDS thing was really massive. And at the time, they were really massive things for us. You know, they really were. And also with that distant threat of technology taking over everything as well, that was also kind of an underlying thing as well. I think the kinds of pressures are different. So I see my son, my eldest son, who's 12, you know, he's on the TikTok and he does all that stuff. And there's a real fun element to it as well. But there's also a lot of pressure to maintain presence in those social media spaces. So we're coming back to social media again. I think amongst his peers, I think they're still the same old kind of dance between, you know, so-and-so's got more pubes than that guy. So, you know what I mean? Like, and I think that archetypal who's got the biggest willy at the urinal. I think all that stuff is really...
Wow.
Yeah, glad we missed out on that, Kevin.
Yeah. Yes. I think all that stuff's really present for young boys trying to become men, you know.
Shame.
But, you know, as far as fear maybe preventing them from doing stuff in life, they're super adaptive and they're pretty robust and, you know, I think the old school thing of just, you know, if they're acting up, just give them some sleep or give them some food and then ask them the question, you know, that they're reacting about.
Kerry, you've got a mixture of older kids and younger kids. Have you seen them go through different periods?
Yeah, my big kids particularly worry a lot about climate change, a lot. But, you know, I think about it, I think it's every generation has these background kind of more existential worries. And I just think in terms of their practical day-to-day life, they're all so privileged. Certainly our kids are so privileged. You know, you think back to previous eras where kids, you know, little kids are working as chimney sweeps or scullery maids. You know, being Jewish, I've got so many friends whose parents were kids during the Holocaust and were literally shepherded out to, you know, to be hidden by families. So they're real threats. You think of the kids in Syria with the, you know, bombs whizzing overhead. Even you think of you know, kids in certain parts of the USA where there's gang warfare. And so our kids, it's all existential threats. And I think it goes on in the background, but I think in day-to-day life, they have very little to worry about. And I think that those existential threats sort of keep going almost like a showreel in the background, and hopefully a lot of them will get up and start being more, you know, much more politically active maybe than we were when the threats weren't quite so pressing. But I think they just manage it like everybody's always managed all sorts of existential threats, whether it's just, oh, I'm going to die one day, or, oh, this virus is coming down.
See, that's what's interesting to me is that all this talk about the coronavirus, what's been really illuminating to me is how it feels to be uncertain and to be on the edges of the panic.
Like, yeah.
I consider myself quite a sensible person. We haven't stockpiled our toilet paper, but there have been moments where I've thought, oh, like this, if this is a real pandemic, and who's to say that we're not going to look back and go, oh, you were the fool for not wearing your mask, you know, and to see how quickly it peaks and how affected people are and how scared they get. And this is the adults. This isn't the kids.
Mm. Yeah.
And children can be so, I would say that children are more susceptible to their adults in their lives and the fear that they're presenting than they are to the media.
Yeah.
So if you're freaking out about the coronavirus, chances are your kid's going to school going, we're all going to die.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, I do know what you mean, but I also think that everything at the moment is completely hypothetical. Nothing much has happened. I mean, yes, very sadly, a few elderly people in this country have died. I think two to this point, which is really sad, but people are dying all the time of colds and flus. Mm. And this may be worse than your regular flu, but it's not going to be, you know, I heard a podcast where someone was interviewing a prepper who had lanterns for when the power goes out. Even in Wuhan, the power didn't go out. You know, the power's not going to go out. The whole city's not going to shut down. At worst, it's going to be like an incredibly bad flu season where a lot of people who are susceptible are going to die, you know, which is really sad and awful. But it's not like society is going to shut down.
Mm. Well, so a guy was on the radio this morning and he was saying, look, statistically, you know, like it's people over 75 who are dead from coronavirus. Also, you know, the way that it kind of manifests itself, you know, you don't know if it's corona or if it's a regular flu.
Yeah.
Da, da, da. And he said,
doctors have got such a fun time.
Oh, my God.
They've got a great time, you know, and someone was saying that a lot of doctors who are so under-informed themselves through their own networks of information and up-to-date stuff are all, you know, relying on Facebook and everything for information, right, which is hilarious anyway.
Terrifying.
But the thing is that this guy was really great because he was super practical and he said, it's just so super disruptive anyway. And he said, cancel your travel plans probably, yes, but not because of fear of actually contracting the virus, because it's a pain in the ass. Because if you cough or you've got a fever above 37.9 degrees at the airport, they're going to retain you and quarantine you.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm coughing because someone just put cow's milk in my coffee and I asked for almond milk.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like...
Well, my son came home the other day and he was coughing and we're like, oh, totally coronavirus. Magically, the next day, it, you know, got better. But there's going to be a lot of people freaking out when they get a cough, and the vast majority are just going to, it's going to clear up like anything else does. And I just think, yes, if you've got someone in your life who is elderly or immunosuppressed, absolutely be worried that they're going to get sick. But society is not going to fall apart. This isn't the apocalypse.
Exactly. Wait,
can someone tell me why it was toilet paper everyone worried about?
I think
about?
It was because, I think somebody said, oh, it wouldn't be a bad idea for people just to make sure you've got a couple of weeks' worth of groceries in case you're quarantined at home. Uh-huh. Things like toilet paper.
People listen to him?
And people listen to him. I'm pretty sure it was him. And the reality is, if you are isolated, if you don't have any friends or family, yes, you need to have, you know, a couple of weeks. You always should anyway, in case you get sick from anything, you know. But if you're a normal, you know, social person who has a network, if God forbid, you know, you get sick, Siobhan, and you run out of toilet paper, you'll call me and say, you know, Kerry, can you? Well, actually, probably not me, because I don't know you. Oh, I don't know where you live.
I'll tell you where I live.
As long as you're not delirious and can't remember your own address. But you call someone, you call me and say, listen, love, I can't get out. We've run out of toilet paper. Will you bring some over?
Yeah.
You know, it's not that catastrophic for
most
people.
I don't know
people.
What I would think of first if I thought we were going to be locked. Yeah, coffee's a good. Well, our coffee machine is broken, Kerry.
Well, that's dire.
It is. I mean, very dire.
You may as well surrender to the virus.
There's no cafes in the world.
All right. So, sometimes we'll agree to the most outrageous things to get our kids to do as we ask, and sometimes it all works out in our favour. We're going to be talking about parental negotiation skills next on the Parent Panel.
I don't like this thing.
Yeah? Well, I don't like running like a crazy person through downtown Disney. I don't know what to do.
Well, the leash is not the answer. You want my help?
Yes, please.
Because I can fix this for you in about 2 minutes. Come on, baby girl. Come with me. We'll be right back.
Look, your dad got her baby high heels, which we said we were never going to let her wear.
I love them.
You look gorgeous, sweetie. Oh, my God. You thought people judged us before. Wait till they meet little Miss Anaheim.
Who cares? Look at her. She can barely move.
So that's the episode of Modern Family.
I remember that.
They all go to Disneyland. Lily is in a period of running off from her parents, so Cam puts her on a leash and Mitch is really embarrassed. I don't have problems with leashes. Anyway, they took the leash off, she starts running everywhere, and then Jay goes and buys her a pair of kitty high heels, which is why he says she can't run. Who cares what people judge us for? And she loves them, of course. On a different level, a colleague this week at Babyology was telling us how every year, so her daughter's birthday is at the end of December, and every year she negotiates another month for her daughter to have her birthday party. I think it's because the kids don't come, but also it's easier for the mum to do it, you know, later. So this year, the alternative celebration date is in June. So her birthday's December. They have the party in June.
I find that a bit odd.
It is, but I kind of high five you. If you can get your kid to agree to a more convenient time for a party, do it. Kerry, when have you negotiated something outside the norm for your kids and how did it work out?
I have been agonizing over this question and I just, every single day I was thinking, you know, last night I was pottering around the kitchen thinking, when do I compromise? And I looked over and my daughter was doing her homework on the couch in front of the TV whilst eating the dinner that was on the couch next to her instead of actually at the table. And I was like, yeah.
That's it.
I'm out. Just every day is a compromise and you fight for the things that are really important. From the time when she was little, when she used to, oh God, like to get her in the bath, sometimes she'd either eat in the bath or she'd put bizarre things in the bath. You know, or, oh, that went through.
I like her style, eating in the bath.
Oh, yeah, and the slime. Okay, so a big one now is slime. She loves making slime, and I was like, you've got too much slime, and you've got to stop making slime. There's so much slime. And when we came up with a system where it's called a restock, so every 3 months she's allowed a restock of her slime ingredients, and there's a big sign in her room, next restock, I know, March 26, and that's when she gets to have more borax and more glue.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's just,
that is so
I'm losing the battle, but yeah, constantly compromising, also known as giving in.
Yeah. What about you, Grant?
Oh, you know, it's funny. I was hearing all those things and that's all the stuff that my wife lets the kids get away with, eating in the bath. But I like to appear as being very staunch and, you know, almost rigid with the guidelines. And I am, to the point of 12-year-olds exploding, you know, in the room. But even this morning, you know, I was like, you're not leaving the house without a rain jacket. Why? Because it's raining. Why? because I said so. It was like the fourth one, you know. And I got proper resistance. And then it was because the rain jacket was too small, because he likes wearing things that are just a bit bigger, right? I'm like, it fits you. It goes to the end of your arm like this. It might not be like your Puff Daddy kind of
You are
vibe.
So cruel. You are setting him up for social death. It's just
But I gave in. So mean. I gave in. And I gave him my Ranger.
Oh, wow.
An old one. So, yeah, I gave in too. But wow. I don't know. It's hard because I always feel like there's times when I give in and I think, okay, that's okay because it's still in the ballpark of the value I'm trying to attach to this. this reason or this guideline. And then other times I think, well, other days I'm just not up for the battle, but I'll dance around things instead of...
I quite like that having a firm line because I have none. And I feel like that was a mistake from the beginning of my parenting experience and I'll never be able to correct it.
But do you feel sometimes that you set a firm line and then your kids are challenging you and it's like, oh yeah, why? I'm not sure. Like I had this thing with my big girl where she wanted her ears pierced and it was like not to...
Not to your 13.
Then my little girl was like, I want my ears pierced, not to your 13. Why? I don't know. Anyway, she ended up getting her ears pierced, I think at 11, and she just got a second one at 12. And I'm like, because I stopped remembering why. Yes. It just seemed all ridiculous. It just seemed so arbitrary.
I'm the same with nail polish. So my mum never wanted us to have nail polish on our nails as little girls. And, of course, my daughter saw me doing my nails.
They all want nail polish.
Yes, and especially...
And the boys too, sometimes.
Arlo has it as well. And it was something, mum would let us do it but not have red.
Oh, because red is
that's
just
a bit
so,
racy.
Yes, exactly. That's too bold for a little girl.
I know, right?
Who knows what will happen?
But I honest to God was like, yeah. I was
sending the wrong messages.
Could hear
to
myself about to say no, and then at the same time I was like, but the problem with that approach, Kerry, is that when you say I don't know why, so let's just be open and do whatever. Unless it's something you feel really strongly about, and I have to be honest, there aren't many things I feel really strongly about. It is, everything is up to negotiation. Yeah. So that's why it's become more of a kid's world, I think, than an adult's world. And I don't know if that's good or bad.
I feel strongly about certain things like bedtimes and nutritious meals. And I have like an issue with soft drink. I just cannot stand my daughter drinking soft drinks. So when she goes to parties, I'm like, have whatever you want. No soft drink. Of course, she still has soft drink, but I feel really strongly about it. You know, my mum always said to me, and I think it's really good advice, she says, you choose your battles. And I think if a child knows that what you do feel strongly about is really important, there are reasons, like bedtimes, for example, or you know, nutritious food. And then, you know, when you show that you can be flexible about other things, I think maybe it reinforces that the important things really are important and not negotiable.
My kids are going to be so confused because my husband and I even disagree about bedtime. So my bedtime is book and song and bed, sleep. But he will show my son stuff on the iPad because we're on different bunks. I put my daughter to sleep on the top bunk. He puts my son to sleep on the bottom bunk. And only on weekends will he show the screen. But, you know, my whole... The last 5 years I've been talking to people about why you don't show screens to kids before bed, particularly boys.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you choose your battles. Oh, my God. It's really hard, especially when you're co-parenting the way we co-parent, to tell someone that's just not happening. And he used to look after my daughter and I never watched telly during the day. My parents just... During the week. We only had it on the weekends and never during the day. And so he'd be looking after her and just couldn't work out how to get her to sleep. So he'd be sending me these pictures. They watch something like Rah Rah or something on the telly. She'd fall asleep in his lap and then he'd put The Wire on.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, what do I say? Like, I'm at work. I don't have to be at home with her all day. And she's little and it's hard.
Yeah.
And so we end up with this situation where I'm like... Okay, kids, when you're with mum.
different rules.
We're the same at bedtime as well. You know, like I love you so much. I'll sing you one song. I'll give you a kiss. The story we do outside of the bedroom. And then I love you. I'll sing you a song. Good night. Straight to sleep. Thank you very much. And I'm out. And you know, my wife's in there and she's lying in there giving them tickles.
Ness is my kind of woman.
Oh, my God.
So I don't do any of that.
She's doing all that stuff. She's in there for like 40 minutes.
Nah. I've always just
like,
said
40
bedtime,
minutes.
Bye, in the room, kiss.
That's 40 minutes of Homeland Series 8, I hope you know, right?
No. But no time for that.
So she goes out with the girls and she might come home and say, so how's everybody? I was like, great. out like yep. that.
Our last topic in just a moment. Parenting wins on a hard day. There can be times as a parent when you think wistfully of what life would be like without numerous sets of clothes to pick up or having a bathroom full of random and often moldy toys. Then again, that could just be my bathroom. And then your kid will do something and you'll be like, all right, parenting isn't so bad. This week, Babyology writer Pip Lincoln has collected a series of things that parents love about parenting. Grant, what do you love about parenting that can make a rough day feel better?
The simple things, the really simple things. When I found I've tried to make it, make everything too complicated.
Coronavirus.
Exactly. Can you see? I ate some toilet paper this morning. It's the simple things, you know, like especially when I've roused on one of them and it's just like I've made it all too much and this demand's not getting met and everyone's complaining and so-and-so's hitting me and it's all just gone to shit.
Yes.
After the whole things just de-excited a bit like that, I like just sitting down and just hanging with them. And like that for me is like when Augie looks up at me, my four-year-old, and he goes, can we push the car really fast? It's like, that's gold. You know, it's something that pulls your attention.
Your actual car? Or like a toy car?
Yeah, he wants to get in the car.
He's a tough kid at 4 years old. He's read Arnie's book. Yeah. You know, those simple things always bring me back to earth and always remind me that that is a simple joy of parenting, you know?
What about you, Kerry?
So, after a really rough day, I guess I guess having one of my kids come to me and say, "Mum, I'm sorry, you were right," is really good.
Shut up! you're being funny. Aren't you?
I'm being funny. My kids get along really well. The three of them.
I want to see a video of that.
Yeah, my kids get along really, really well. They give me hell. You know, they band together and just make fun of me. Like my son, you know, I'll make a suggestion and say, "Oh, you know, I need to do this, that, and the other. What do you think, Mum?" And I'll say, you know, well, I think you should do X, Y, and Z. He goes, oh, what would you know, stupid old lady? But it's like he's being funny. My big girl calls me Sack. My surname is Sackville. So she doesn't call me Mum. She calls me Sack. She's like, oh, all right, Sack. Yes, Sack. You know, my little one's like, Mum, do you need another glass of wine? Like, really? You're getting stressed here. And the three of them together just build on each other. Sometimes I just quietly leave the room and I see them laughing hysterically at me. And with each other, I just love that.
That's
the best.
Gorgeous.
It's the best.
Seeing them get along.
Seeing my kids get along. And I don't think you can force it. I don't think it's anything I did. I think it's just pure luck that the chemistry worked between them. And I know that, you know, they all really enjoy each other's company, even though I don't understand most of what they're talking about because they're talking about YouTubers and memes and stuff that makes no sense to me. Mm. But that's okay. And then I go downstairs and have a glass of wine in my bedroom by myself while they just laugh at me. Brilliant.
That could be sad, but I think it's delightful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. I was thinking this morning, actually, so now I've got just one drop off. I have an extra half hour, which of course...
Oh, don't tell Grant. Poor Grant. Exactly.
I know.
Two and a half hours.
Sorry, Grant.
Anyway.
Well, the thing is that it's kind of like money. When you have more, you spend more. So I have more time. So if I get up at 6 a.m., everything is a breeze. If I get up at 6:30, it's just that little bit harder. But this morning, both of them were in bed with me. And my husband doesn't do this because he often either leaves early. He's quite a hot man. So the kids don't cuddle up to him as much in the morning, but they know that I love it. And so I had one on either side of me. It was raining outside and they both just wanted cuddles and they wanted me to stroke their back. And I was thinking, oh, I have to do this and this and this before I go and blah, blah, blah. Actually, one of the things was meditation because I try to meditate in the morning just for 10 minutes. I never get the time. And I thought, I can lie here and I will miss my time for meditation, or I can lie here and just enjoy what is. And I was so proud of myself because I don't do that often. And the one time I will do it is for cuddles in the morning. And then, of course, you've got the whole shit fight of morning where everything, I haven't got my homework. You've had all week to do your homework. All that stuff goes on. But just that moment in the morning when they're right close to you and you know you'll never have that time again.
I'm absolutely.
Like, this is what makes it worthwhile.
Yeah.
But you know how they used to say when they were babies and they'd scream all night and they'd go, and one smile and it makes it all worthwhile. Who the fuck are you?
No,
like,
I'm sorry.
Seriously, how does one smile make
when
up
you're
for 8 hours?
When you're exhausted and you're just delirious for sleep and, you know, your nipples are sore and...
Everything's sore,
Everything's sore and you've got no food in the house. The kid smiles and you're like, just go away. I don't want to see your face. I just want, I want to go back to bed. It just doesn't.
It doesn't. I'm glad you agree. I'm not sure about your grant, but that was just never enough.
No, I always say to myself, I'm going to set the alarm for 10 minutes earlier. 10 minutes earlier, and then I won't be the guy that kind of like runs out the door, dragging everybody, get in the van, and then it's like someone goes, I haven't got my whatever it is.
I'm like, oh, always.
Nah.
Yeah, no, it doesn't happen.
You're not going to have it today.
Well, it's lovely to have you both back in the studio.
So nice to be here.
All right. Well, thank you so much both for coming in.
You're welcome.
I'm Siobhan Hunt. See you next week. You've been listening to The Parent Panel, a Babyology podcast, hosted and produced by me, Siobhan Hunt. For more information on the show or to check out other episodes with equally funny and insightful guests, you can find all you need at our website, babyology.com.au/parentpanel.